Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Min Shen. Goldie Blumenstick is a reporter and editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education. She covers a wide range of topics and is known for her expertise on for-profit higher education, college finances, and more. Her book, American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know, talks about changing demographics in colleges and the rising cost of higher education. She recently wrote a special report, The Adult Student, The Population Colleges and the Nation Can't Afford to Ignore, and visited Penn State as the keynote speaker for the Hendrick Best Practices for Adult Learners Conference. Goldie Blumenstick, welcome to Take Note.
Thank you for having me.
When we think about college students, most people might have the image of a young adult leaving high school at 18 or around that age, but adult learners are not that. So can you help us define the characteristics that would put someone in the adult learner or the adult student category and tell us a little bit about who they are?
Sure. I mean, the obvious and most easiest way to define an adult student is by age. You know, we typically go by 24 or older, just because that's how some of the statistics are kept. But a better way to think about that is a little bit more holistically. Think about what the characteristics are of this, what this person's life is. I mean, the adult student is primarily the person who probably doesn't think of him or herself as a student first. They probably think of themselves as a parent first, or an employee first, or as a spouse first. And going to school is an important part of their life, but it's not necessarily their main job. So I think when you think about it that way, you can be talking a lot often about older students, but you're also talking a lot about students today who are traditional age students, but there's a lot of 20-year-olds who have kids who are in college. There's a lot of 20-year-olds who are helping support their families. There's a lot of 20-year-olds who are working full-time. And so one of the reasons that I think this issue and this report and this whole topic is so important is because while we focus it on adult students, anything colleges do to improve their services and their approaches to serving adult students, I think also helps colleges serve all students better.
And in reality, adult learners are becoming a large portion of college students. I think the statistic is that students age 25 and older now constitute about 27% of the undergrad population.
Yeah, although honestly, that number hasn't shifted all that much. Typically, what happens with older students is they come back to college in a cyclical way with the economy. And that means when the economy is good, a lot more people don't come back to school. But when the economy kind of goes south, a lot more do. So 5 or 6 years ago, when the economy was kind of really tanking, there was a big rush of adults who came back to college because they were losing their jobs and they decided to go back and try to get retraining. Right now, I think adult enrollments are kind of dipping a little bit and they're not as high because a lot of people can get jobs right now because we have such a sort of a, you know, tight labor market. But what's happening is also, you know, our economy is changing very fast now. The demand for these kind of jobs is changing. There's a lot more demand for digital skills. There's a lot more automation happening in the economy. And so I feel like in a few more years, we're going to probably see, well, we'll probably have another recession, unfortunately. And so we'll have a lot of people coming back to school. And we'll also see people coming back to school because they're going to need to have these jobs. And they're going to need to be trained for them.
And I think, like you mentioned, there's kind of a reaction to the economy reflected in the trends of how many adult learners are enrolled. And I think that also speaks to the goals or what adult learners have in mind when they come back or go for higher education. Can you talk a little bit about how adult learners, their goals and their challenges in getting higher education would differ from the traditional age student?
Well, you know, in some ways, they're both the same. I mean, all the surveys of young adults, of young people, traditional age students going back to college, they all still list the number one reason as they want to get a good job. And frankly, that's the same reason that adults are going back. But in both cases, I think adults and younger students are looking for something more. And in some cases, the adult students, they probably want that something more, even more than the young people, because they know what they've been missing. It's certainly true that, you know, getting ahead in their careers is the top priority for everybody in this. But for many adults, they want to do it for their children. They want to do it because they feel like it's something that they missed out the first time around or the second or the third time around. I've heard people talk about it as, you know, it's the kind of thing they can get that, you know, an education can't be taken away from them. And in an economy that's changing where there's a lot of instability about, you know, people and they worry about their jobs and they worry about keeping their homes, they know that they have their education. So it has this kind of bigger feeling to it besides just, oh, it's going to help me get that promotion, or it's going to help me get in the door at this company or something like that.
So it should account for kind of the experience or whatever they think, the kind of growth that comes with it.
It's definitely about training, and, you know, these are definitely more so probably than the younger cohort of students. Adults are making a return on investment, an ROI kind of decision. But there's something bigger about the decision also, because, gosh, it's such a huge sacrifice that they're making. I mean, I just heard a panel of adult students speaking at this Hendrick conference. One of the women there talked about what it costs. And she said, you know, even if it's a reasonable price, every dollar that she spends towards college is dollar that she's not spending on her family. And that just really hit me, actually, because, you know, it is for a lot of people a very much of a zero-sum game. The same is true for a lot of 18-year-olds who are paying for the college themselves or their families who are, you know, have a tight time paying for college. But for the adults, it's just that much more out there, you know, flat out, because there's all the other people who are relying on them.
And because of this change in college student demographics and the different sets of needs or challenges that might come with it, I think there are some shortcomings exposed in how colleges are not meeting those needs.
Yeah, sadly, there are many.
Yeah, and I think one example is the lack of childcare centers on college campuses. But beyond that, what shows to you that many colleges are designed to serve traditional age students and may not be very well suited to serve this new kind of student?
Well, the most obvious one is just think about what the hours are for when colleges are open, usually 8 o'clock till about 5 p.m. Think about the working adult student. When are they going to get to go to the career center? When are they going to be able to talk to the registrar about some complication with their schedule? How can they resolve a billing issue? I mean, if these offices aren't open in the evenings, they're not going to be able to do that. When can they meet with their academic advisor? All these things cost colleges money because, you know, opening hours up on the weekends adds to your expenses too. But if you're going to serve students, and they should serve these students, they need to think about when the students need to be face-to-face with somebody or when they could do something online. You can probably create a lot more of these functions online too, but you have to do it.
And before we talk about some ways that higher education is now changing the ways that they do things, I want to ask about the prospect of adult learners. You cited multiple times in your special report that by 2050, two-thirds of the jobs in the United States would require some sort of post-secondary education or training, and you believe that it should be adult learners who fill in that gap.
Well, I think in that statistic, actually, it's even for closer. I think it's more like 2020 or 2025.
Wow.
That's the number that's been out there for a while. And that doesn't necessarily mean everybody, by the way, has to go get a four-year degree tomorrow and to solve that. But it does probably mean a lot more people are going to need some advanced education beyond high school. It's not even so much that people with college degrees are doing so much better. It's just that people who only have a high school degree, as a general rule, aren't doing as well. They're suffering in the economy. Those are the kinds of jobs that are disappearing. Those sort of the lower wage jobs, the ones that can be easily automated. Those are the kinds of jobs that are going away. It's a two-generation problem in some cases too, because if you're a 40-year-old person and you're going to lose your job, suddenly you've lost your income and your children are going to suffer from that too. That's why I think this crisis about helping colleges figure out how to better serve adults is really so vital right now. It's not just for the students who are currently in the economy or currently potential students, but it also could affect their families.
It's more like a necessity.
I mean, it really is. And it's obviously more severe in some parts of the country than others. And it's more severe in some industries than others. We do not have a very forgiving economy right now. And so it's really important that people recognize how they can use education to sort of equip themselves as best they can.
You also reported that there are things being done in this current system of higher education that just discourage adult learners from going or going back to colleges. Can you talk a little bit about what are they, give some examples, and do you feel like colleges are coming to realize that and are actively trying to change some things?
The second question, yes, of course there are some colleges that are trying to change some things. How quickly and how effectively is a whole other set of questions. You know, there's so many barriers to adults going back. You mentioned childcare before. That's a really big one. There's a big challenge for enrolling when you first start to enroll. A lot of students who started college a few years ago, they might still have a bad debt. They might have an unpaid bill somewhere, makes it hard for them to get a transcript from their old college. Now suddenly they're in this bureaucratic nightmare because they can't get their transcript. And they might not be able to afford to pay back that old debt, even though within a year or two, if they can complete their degree, they're going to be much better off financially. So there really needs to be, someone's got to solve this part of the problem. People who want to go back to school, if they have a modest amount of debt somewhere else, there ought to be some way to sort of either have some common agreement for schools to write that debt off after a certain period of time, or find some way to cover the debt and get it repaid later. But that's the biggest challenge. And in general, it's money. State financial aid policies generally are harder for adults to qualify for. Sometimes they're first come, first serve. The money gets used up, and adults tend to make their decisions about going to college much later in the process. They're not on that, cycle of the freshman applying for a freshman year or the year before, and so the money isn't available to them. Those are the kinds of things that policymakers and schools can handle. There's also sort of, I don't know if I want to call them societal issues, but maybe family issues that are a challenge. Some families don't really understand why an adult would want to go back to school. Some people might get pressure from their peer groups not to go back. And if you're an adult, you have to kind of overcome that. And that's not always so easy. But all these things are, if you're the adult, there's 10,000 reasons not to go back that are current and tangible and right in front of you. And while there's also really good reasons to go back, those all seem a little further out, further away. So it's hard to make that trade-off.
And there are many things that people are exploring these days that can be done to address those barriers. And I think, first off, it's mentioned a lot that a much more flexible higher education system is necessary. So I want to ask you, what would make it flexible? And based on the things that might have been tried, how effective could this flexibility be?
I mean, there's a lot of flexibility nationally in the system. Whether every institution has this a degree of its, it's really the problem or the question. I mean, first off is the things I mentioned, things like having service hours that are more amenable to the hours that adults need for getting their services. To think a little bit about the classes. A lot of the research that I've seen says that adults really prefer classes in a little bit more compressed formats rather than, 12-week semesters, 16-week semesters,
16.
Even. This is a 16-year. Maybe 8-week compressed semesters. People, it's easier. I mean, it means you're doing a lot more every week, and then the burden is greater. But it's sort of easier to see the end in sight when it's, 16 weeks down the road or 12 weeks down the road. It seems like a long way. Anybody can kind of power through 8 weeks of something. That's how I felt when writing these reports. I can power through. I can do this. So compressed schedules. And that means sort of having a lot more flexibility in the calendar. And that's a challenge for institutions, but there's ways to do that. I think having a lot more options of online classes or hybrid versions of classes that, where students can do some of the work online and some of the work face-to-face. Not everybody wants to be online. For some people, it feels too distant. So there's some versions of that that institutions can kind of create. Those are some of the biggest ones. And then even in the classroom itself, as you're thinking about adult students, there's a different way of teaching adults sometimes. You have to think about they bring a different life experience to the course, to the programming. They've experienced things that other students are just sort of reading about as theories. And so having a teaching having a pedagogy, which is actually for adults, it's called andragogy, having an andragogy that really reflects the student body or the fact that you might have this more diverse student pool in your classrooms is really important. So I think faculty development and people who are thinking a lot about teaching and learning right now need to be a little bit more deliberate in how they're thinking about who's in the classroom and or who might be getting their lessons.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Goldie Blumenstick. She's a reporter and editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education. She's the author of the book, American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know, and recently a special report on adult students and how colleges should respond to the demographic changes in higher education. I want to follow up on this idea of flexibility. Some colleges are now providing certificate programs that could, quote unquote, stack toward a degree. And similarly, programs like prior learning assessment and competency-based education seem to be a way to grant some flexibility for adult students. And for those of us who are not familiar with those programs, can you first off talk about what they do?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you've identified a lot of the higher ed jargon that I deal with a lot every day, and I appreciate the chance to kind of cut through it a little bit. So let's start with stackable credentials. Think about if you started college and maybe you started out by getting a certificate in a certain field. Maybe it was industrial machining. That might be like a course of 12, 15, 20 credits worth of a course. And when you come out of that, you have that certificate and it qualifies you for a certain level of jobs. And then let's say a year or two later, you say, you know what? I want to move up a little bit in this world. I want to get a whole associate's degree. I don't want to just have this certificate. Then you can go back and hopefully, you know, a lot of institutions are creating models where, oh, we know that certificate. That fits just nicely. It nests right in with our new engineering tech program. And so you come back in and then suddenly you can go on for a few more semesters of courses and suddenly you have the associate. Not suddenly, you've done a lot of work to get that. But right. You've built into it and you have got this certificate and then you can earn your associate's degree. And then let's say, you know, a year or so later, you know, I really want to go get a bachelor's degree in engineering. And you come back to the college, hopefully that college or maybe a different one. And in an ideal world, even the different institution would look back at what you've created and said, oh, I see how that certificate stacks to that associate's degree. Here's all you need to do now to complete your bachelor's degree. So that's the whole notion of the stackable credential.
But ideally, you wouldn't be necessarily, say, starting from scratch every time you consider getting some next level of
right,
education.
Exactly right. And not only would you, I mean, even now, if you go for associates, you don't start from scratch. But these kinds of stackable credentials would cover things like some of your electives and some of the other stuff too, and it would really make sure that you didn't waste a lot of time as you were pursuing, you know, your ultimate degree goal. Some of the theory behind these stackable credentials is also perhaps, you know, maybe you worked in an industry. The one I hear about a lot is like even the retail industry, they have a certificate program. And maybe your college would recognize that retail industry certificate and give you 10, 12 credits to start with. So it's also a notion of colleges trying to recognize credentials that didn't come from other colleges. That's a harder sell in higher ed right now, but it's starting to happen more so maybe at community colleges, but increasingly at four-year colleges too. All that fits with this whole, you started to talk about prior learning assessments and competency-based education. So all of this is sort of in the same class as that. Competency-based education, you wouldn't necessarily have to have the certificates. You should be able to kind of come in to an institution and a school could just, you could maybe take some tests or prove through portfolio or other vehicles, I know this amount of stuff. And someone should be able to turn around to you and say, you know this amount of stuff and you're going to get this much credit for it. You'll get sort of credit for your competency. It's not about you have to sit through six semesters to get 3 times 6, but whatever credits it is, you can get the credits based on what your knowledge is, not just based on your seat time.
Well, those all sounds like very ideal and seems reasonable enough. So I want to know what's the argument against it.
What's the holdback? It sounds really reasonable. It's not so easy to actually do. I mean, it's not so easy to assess what people know. You know, even though there's this whole movement around prior learning assessment, it's not a cookie cutter process. And so you don't actually have to reinvent the wheel, but many people reinvent some version of a wheel. You know, history 101 is often history 101, but what you've learned on your job as a, you know, part-time assistant helping out at a museum might not be as easy to quantify. So there's some practical reasons why it's not as easily done as I made it sound right here when I write out the book, you know, as I already described it in the book. And then let's be honest, there's also some, you know, territorial reasons. Not every college wants to give credit for stuff that they didn't award. Not every faculty is willing to believe, rightly or wrongly, that what was learned on the job is equal to what they've done, what they'll teach in the classroom. I mean, and I think this is sort of new for higher ed, particularly as colleges are thinking increasingly about how they align their programs with what employers are looking for. And so there's not even that much expertise about there. There are some organizations that are really good at it. There's a Council for Adult and Experiential Learning, which has been very involved with prior learning assessment techniques over the years, and there's other organizations that do the same. But the body of knowledge is not widespread, and it's not uniform around higher ed. It's not even uniform within single colleges. I mean, at a lot of colleges, there's really one department that's really good at PLA and they, you know, go to the college or the department down the block and they don't do it at all and they don't even have a procedure for it. So it's still very uneven.
And I think to examine this wide range of policies and practices that may be obstacles to enrolling more adult students, including looking at Gen Ed requirements, looking at transfer policies, tuition pricing and financial aid and everything. But when we take a step back, shouldn't that kind of examination, this look into it, also apply to all learners? Is this a chance for higher education system to look at what people come to them for and what they actually provide?
I think, oh gosh, absolutely. In a way, the calling it the adult learner process, I think, is maybe an easier way to do it because you need a frame around something because it's hard to sort of step back and examine everything from every angle. If you're looking at it from an adult perspective, I think that gives you a framework to start. The bottom line is if you've come up with solutions to solving the problems that, you know, what I defined earlier as an adult student, if you can solve those students' challenges, you're going to solve a lot of other students' challenges along the way. There are organizations that I work with in D.C. and other places that talk about, you know, fixing higher ed or transforming higher education to serve today's students, but no one quite knows what that means. So I feel like in a way, ride the adult train a little bit and you'll get very far with it.
The messaging also matters.
Yeah, the messaging really matters. And I mean, well, all of it matters. I mean, obviously, if you're talking about, you know, when we're talking about today's students, we're talking about a lot more first-generation students, and that matters. We're also talking a lot about populations of students that have not historically gone to college, more lower-income students, more minority students. And somehow or other, as I think about it, talking about all the needs of the adult student gets you pretty far because you're talking about economic issues and you're talking about structural issues and you're talking about pedagogical issues, all of which end up translating.
One aspect of higher education today is the rising cost of tuition. It almost feels like you can't really talk about it without talking about higher education. And it is growing at a pace three times the inflation rate since the 1970s. In your 2014 book, you offered a few factors that help explain the high cost, which I feel like don't often get mentioned enough, like education being a service industry that employs a lot of highly skilled workers, and that at the same time, student aid has also really increased as well. But all of this, in the end, still seem to beg the question for students, I guess, across the board, is going to college still worth it?
It is still worth it, but I think students need to make a very informed decision, and their families, about how they do it. You know, the affordability has become a much bigger issue for families than it ever was before, in part because, I mean, the trade-offs are big. But I don't think you can look at the statistics broadly and argue that it's not a good idea. I think families also need to be pretty realistic about what they're looking at. Make sure that a choice that your family can afford, that you're not taking out too much debt. And if you're willing to take out a lot of debt, make sure your student knows why they're going. You know, there's a lot of theory about college also, and one of the things I learned when I was working on the book was how you go to college can be as important as where you go. I mean, God, we heard a lot of talk about where you go to college being important in this whole admission scandal thing, and there's many things about that are just so incredibly sad. There's a lot of terrific colleges you could go to right now where you could have, you know, undergraduate research opportunities, great opportunities to have mentorship relationships with faculty or staff, opportunities for work and learn experiences along the way. And so I feel like if families could just get a little bit more, I don't know if sophisticated is the right word, maybe thoughtful about how they choose a college, or even adults how they choose a college, these choices might not be quite so high stakes. You can sort of tell this is what you're getting in return. And if a school can't tell you you'll be getting, you know, these things that are important, then don't go. Go to the one that can.
That sets up very nicely of this questions that I have on the other side of is it worth it? Your colleague at the Chronicle of Higher Education, Scott Carlson, wrote about this argument that he heard from economist Brian Kaplan, who said that a college degree is no more than a signal to send to employers indicating that you have the ability to do an entry-level job. And he says something about people don't really go to college to learn about things. What do you make of that argument of people kind of earning this pass to get into the workforce.
Well, he's not wrong, actually. And the problem with the college degree right now, and this is a challenge for students and for all institutions, is making sure that people know that there is value in that degree. And that means not that means more than marketing. It is true that that signal is considered increasingly muddy out there. Part of what I was talking about before, this value that, you know, having a degree is more valuable in the marketplace, that's changing a little bit now as people are finding alternative ways to signal what they know. In some cases, these alternative signals are some of these industry certifications, or companies are hiring differently. They're starting to hire a lot more based on skills testing. They'll do these kinds of tests, and they'll have you come in and do a battery of tests. And if you pass their battery of tests, they might hire you even if you don't have a degree. Now, honestly, there aren't that many companies really doing that, despite all the noise you hear about that. But that's the direction things are moving. And so I think if colleges are not aware that those are the directions that, that the employment market is moving, then they'll be in trouble. I mean, it's one of the things I talk about in the other new report. Colleges need to sort of understand that they need to make sure that their degrees still mean something. So I think that the challenges for the degree right now is for colleges to understand what's out there in the market and make sure that, you know, when you get a degree from Penn State or some other place, that people know, well, what does that mean? That means this student knows, is smart in their discipline, that they've had these kinds of experiences, that they're digitally skilled now. I'm adding digital skills to the mix. They, you know, the degree means something. You know, there's actually a whole giant movement going on behind this that's a little bit behind the scenes right now between employers and companies and hiring managers to try to do this, make this a little bit clearer, back to this sort of skills mapping thing, make some better connections through technology and other ways so people can know if you've got a, you know, you've got a degree in this field, it is valid. People will trust it, you know. And so that's there's this kind of validation process that's going to be happening over the next, I'd say, 5 to 10 years in the market that's going to really sort of change the nature of degrees. But I don't think degrees are going anywhere.
What would you say to an adult learner or even just a traditional age student who asks you if getting a college degree was still worth the cost and what should they really do to maximize their college degree?
I would say it's probably worth the cost, but they should make sure that they know what they're doing, particularly for an adult student who's giving up income or giving up time at their job or with their families. They should make sure that the trade-off is worth it. And if the school that they're looking at can't help them see why how the trade-off is worth it, they should consider other places. you know, the stakes are too high. A lot of students are already who've started school before and didn't finish. They already have debt that they have to deal with. You don't want to go back and add to that debt load without it making some sense. But I think there's there's research out there, and there's, you know, some of the things I've talked about, you know, making sure your experience is a rich one and it gives you what you need. If you can be sure that that's what the experience is going to be, do it. You can't hurt yourself by having more skills and more tools in your quiver to sort of, you know, get where you need to go.
Well, Goldie, thank you very much for joining us on Take Note.
Thank you very much for having me.
Goldie Blumenstick is a reporter and editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education. She covers a wide range of topics and is known for her expertise on for-profit higher education, college finances, and more. She recently wrote a special report, The Adult Student, The Population Colleges and the Nation Can't Afford to Ignore, and visited Penn State as the keynote speaker for the Hendrick Best Practices for Adult Learners Conference. You can listen to more Take Note interviews on wpsu.org/take note. I'm Min Qian, WPSU.